Welcome to today's edition of the Rush Limbaugh Show podcast.
It's an honor to be with you. It always will be, as we have an opportunity to talk together as lifetime students of the Limbaugh Institute. It's 800-282-2882 if you'd like to join us on this day made for us by God as a gift in these times in which he has decided we will live. we've been talking about the inflation, and just before the program began today, we learned that the cost of blackmail has gone up. According to Bloomberg and other media sources, a Colonial Pipeline has paid these hackers who locked up their equipment $5 million in ransom. So we talked about staple foods going up and fuel prices going up and lumber through the roof. And in this America, this Kamala Harris with a strong assist by Joe Biden's dementia, we're in this situation now where the costs of blackmail has gone up. I have just a prediction, and these are always dangerous to do, but I predict sometime in the next 6 months, we're going to find out that Joe Biden's dementia pressured the people at Colonial Pipeline to pay this money, or maybe even put taxpayer dollars into this, because they can't avoid people panicking because they've made a habit of panicking people. Not a habit, they've made a tactic of panicking people. So consequently, people hear about this pipeline and get into the gas lines and are emptying out gas stations of all the available fuel. And it makes perfect sense because you had a year and a half of technocrats telling us that we're in the balance, that this virus is going to kill us all. They let domestic terror groups run wild to the country. And unless you are Thomas Friedman at the New York Times, you knew they got to burn down American cities. So, of course, people are going to respond and go out and want to buy things. This is a remarkable aspect of politics, that they take something like international relations and they mystify it. They make it seem really complicated. And look, global politics is complicated, but it also comes down to some basic human facts like psychology. We are buying, what Biden would like us to do is go back to buying oil or our energy from companies or countries that don't like us. And then don't wish us well. If we really take a moment to assess how we've locked ourselves into, say, the Chinese Communist Party. There are a lot of Americans on a lot of medications that are highly addictive, and for some folks, very helpful, and for other people, not so helpful. China makes a strong percentage of these. Do we understand that if we got into a serious conflict with China, they could say, hey, we're not going to make that anymore. We've got all the facilities, we've got all the processes, but we're not going to do it. You would have a calamitous event in the country if they chose to make that decision. So when Donald Trump brought to the White House and to America this unpredictable nature, no one had him psychologically mapped. No one. Everybody has the Biden administration psychologically mapped. They don't know who's running things. Maybe they do. We don't. But the response to this, which is no response, was just completely predictable. And imagine being our ally, Israel. Oh, we're back to having to enter the back door of the White House, which is, of course, what Obama did. Now, these decisions they make, it's not that they're stupid. They're really not. In fact, here's Rush proving beyond doubt that the left and now the party, they're not dumb. They simply don't have America's interests at heart.
All right, here is Ariel Cohen, and this was published in the New York Post on the op-ed page. Ariel Cohen's a PhD senior research fellow in international energy security at the Heritage Foundation. Is the author of The Real World, which is a weekly column published in the Middle East Times. It begins this way. As you go deeper into debt, filling up your tank with $4 gas this weekend, look on the bright side. You're helping to fund countries that hate you. From Russia to Iran to Venezuela, America's adversaries are splurging on oil windfalls, while programs directed against Uncle Sam and his allies are funded by petroleum revenues. Big bucks are allowing the oil sultans and dictators to intimidate U.S. allies, buy politicians and academics, and purchase election outcomes. Oil prices are going up partly because of supply and speculation, but also because these countries can decide to punish the U.S. or limit our influence, particularly when they disagree with policies toward Iraq and Israel. The ironic thing about all this is that Americans in this country, thanks to liberal Democrats and the Obama campaign, have been told for decades to hate U.S. oil companies. They're the big bogeyman. The revenues of the major oil-producing countries have quadrupled in 3 years. Since 9/11, oil prices have more than quintupled. This year, Europe and the U.S. will spend approximately $2 trillion on imported oil, while the world will spend close to $3 trillion. This money recycles back to the U.S. and the West, often in the most legitimate ways. Sovereign investment funds have acquired large chunks of America's financial flagships: Citigroup, Merrill Lynch, Morgan Stanley, Blackstone, and the Carlyle Group. However, oil revenues may be used in much more sinister ways. Money can buy nuclear weapons programs, ballistic missile arsenals, and other arms. It can also pay for terrorist armies. Today's attempt to overthrow the pro-American government in Lebanon is bankrolled by Iran. Hezbollah is a wholly owned Iranian subsidiary. Its chief has the official title of the representative of Iran's supreme leader in Lebanon. Iran paid for 27,000 rockets Hezbollah has aimed at Israel. Iran also buys Hamas weapons and popularity in Gaza. Saudi princes have poured tens of millions into prestigious universities, from Georgetown and Harvard to Cambridge and Edinburgh. Former senior government officials and ambassadors are on the royal payroll, influencing their colleagues in the diplomatic service. This is how the Saudi peace plan, calling for undermining Israel through a massive influx of Palestinian refugees, received U.S. support at the highest levels. This is how the Carter Center in Atlanta ended up taking millions in Gulf oil money. The essential analysis of this is that we are a great country at grave risk in a dangerous world. And there are people, countries, despots, tyrants, thugs, who would love to cut us down to size and don't have to do it militarily. They can do it by making us dependent on what they have that we don't have. Making us dependent on what they have that we also have, but that we won't produce. And they have to be happy as they can be. When they look at the presidential race in the United States of America and say, we don't have to give money to either side because whoever wins, America's energy policy is going to only benefit us, the people who are trying to cut America down to size. Because it seems to them, OPEC, Chavez, the Saudis, whoever you want to mention, Putin, the Russians, they can look at our presidential campaign and they can see that whoever wins, America is going to become more and more and more dependent on foreign oil. And in fact, if these presidential candidates get their way, the U.S. is going to actually punish itself without any help from abroad by inflicting tremendous tax increases and regulations on American businesses that produce energy, and thereby destroying the ability to create wealth on the part of American investors, corporations, and citizens. So if you are the enemy of the United States and you're trying to punish us for whatever reason, you don't like our policy with Israel, you don't like us being in Iraq, you don't like the fact that we kicked your butt in the Cold War and the Berlin Wall came down, whatever reason you hate us, you got to be smiling big today because you're watching your greatest enemy and threat destroy itself.
I can't express adequately how amazing it is to hear that and watch this. Donald Trump, President Trump, had us on a course to energy independence, and it has been immediately reversed by Joe Biden's dementia. And we talked yesterday about the statement that President Trump put out about Martha's Vineyard and these windmills, where he was saying, congratulations, your views have been destroyed. These are terribly inefficient energy systems. They kill birds. They make problems with navigation, etc. Good thing they're not coming from China, where they're made by slaves in concentration camps. Because, I mean, the weather czar, John Kerry, he'd never buy from slave labor, right? I mean, he would have a vigorous objection to that, right? The party that says that all white people are racist and whiteness is the problem in the world and that racial equity is what matters, and they'd never be filling up the waters around Martha's Vineyard with Communist Party China slave labor made windmills, right? Well, stay tuned, and we'll tell you if that's the case. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Just one other reason to have your Rush 24/7 membership. A few weeks ago, when I was honored to be in on EIB, we did a little segment on John Kerry. And this incredible bit of audio that the Maha found of, you remember John Kerry when he was testifying and pretending to care about his military service and said, on a manner reminiscent of Genghis Khan. And no one says Genghis Khan or Genghis Kane, as Rush said. And then they found the clip of him walking when he was campaigning for president. I'm John Kerry. Pardon me. Hi. Is this where I get me a hunting license? Because there is no John Kerry, just like there is no Mitt Romney. So talk about energy independence and being dependent upon countries that hate us. And I will admit something to you. I am a bigot in this way. I have trouble believing people can be as stupid as to make a deal with the Communist Party of China to put the United States of America on a path to the least efficient form of energy in the world, wind. Least predictable. But that's exactly what's going on. So I'm left with this other question of, can people be that corrupt? But I have no proof that John Kerry's, you know, getting direct monies from the Chinese Communist Party. Not that he wouldn't take them. Not that there aren't a gajillion ways to launder Chinese communist money that goes on all the time in the country. Now, this entity and that entity consults this entity and that entity, and they all end up with an office right near the White House somehow. So yesterday in Washington, D.C., on Capitol Hill, during a hearing on the weather, John Kerry testified. So during this question period, Representative Mike McCaul from Texas, a Republican, asks John Kerry, and picture Kerry's face as you hear this audio. He asks John Kerry, how can you ensure that this quest we're on, that slave labor coming out of China, where genocide is taking place as we speak, are never a part of the climate solution in the United States?
You're absolutely correct, Ranking Member McCaul. It is a problem. Xinjiang province not only produces some of the solar panels that we believe are being, in some cases, produced in forced labor by Uyghurs, but also there are a significant amount of rare earth mineral that's used in the solar panels themselves.
Well, it's good that it's a significant problem. Breathtaking. Breathtaking. Imagine if President Trump had said, yeah, that's a significant problem. The world would have slipped half an inch on its axis with people jumping up and down in D.C. and on the Mockingbird media. It's a problem. And so to people who may have relatives in these concentration camps in China, Uyghurs in our country, in the United States, I want you to know John Kerry recognizes that's not optimal. And it's a problem. He wants you to know that. So at least you know you've got his attention, and he's very well, I wouldn't say concerned. I mean, it's not like it's a concern, it's a problem. These are completely optional devices that we don't need. The lives of the Uyghurs, Well, I'm sure they don't feel their lives are optional. But, I mean, in China, under the Communist Party, I mean, there's a life and then there's a dollar for a kidney or more than that. Now, that's not the only bit out of this. Let's get addicted to running our country's energy with assets from the Chinese Communist Party committed to total war. There's this. This is Tuesday in a White House briefing. The Energy Secretary, Jennifer Granholm, was asked about the Colonial Pipeline and the gas shortage. So this is an unidentified reporter who said, obviously, we have the acute issues with the Colonial Pipeline ransomware attack. Looking more holistically in a macro view, how does this speed up the efforts at DOE to move in a more renewable direction, since this is going to have an impact on people at the pump?
We obviously are all in on making sure that we meet the president's goals of getting to 100% clean electricity by 2035 and net zero carbon emissions by 2050. And, you know, if you drive an electric car, this would not be affecting you, clearly.
If you drive an electric car, this wouldn't be affecting you, except for the electricity that actually, in some cases, is converted petroleum energy. Except the wheels on the car. We haven't yet figured out the electronic wheels on a car. I mean, it's smart. As Elon Musk is, he hasn't yet figured out how to get an electronic force field to keep the car afloat above the asphalt that contains petroleum. Furthermore, it's the very rare electric train, electric barge or ship that can generate enough energy capacity to bring the cars here. This is this fantasy. Now, I know this can seem really overwhelming and somewhat scary, but I do want us to take a moment and reflect on something. Yes, the prices for blackmail have gone up. Yes, apparently, according to Bloomberg, Colonial has paid $5 million in ransomware. Yes, that's going to engender and encourage more attacks against our nation's infrastructure. Yes, all those things are true. And it can seem overwhelming, but this is the time for us to reflect on the fact that the mayor of South Bend, the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, is bringing all of his year, well, pardon me, all of his month of experience with things like this to bear, if we're keeping track. That is the same mayor of South Bend, Indiana, who we caught on this program pulling into D.C. in gas-powered SUVs with oil-based wheels, pardon me, tires, getting out of the oil-powered SUVs, producing a bicycle with petroleum product-based wheels so he could pedal his way into downtown D.C., into the Capitol, that is surrounded by a militarized fence for reasons of theater, which will loop us all back around. Why are we paying the Chinese Communist Party approved company that is forcing slaves to produce these windmills to plant them into Martha's Vineyard's waters? Theater. Ba-da-da-ba-ba-da-ba-da. And lobbying. And stupidity. And, my judgment, corruption. Just try this anywhere in the real world, wherever you work. Boss, I got an idea. Let's buy less efficient energy from a company that hates us and wants us to disappear from the marketplace. You'll either get a raise or you'll be tossed from your profession forevermore. I'll let you figure out which. We're not done with John Kerry because he's not done with us. You won't believe this. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Oh, it's a pleasure to be with you. And I just responded to a text from someone just said, hey, listen, in defense of Joe Biden's dementia, this $5 million payoff to the ransomware hackers at Colonial Pipeline. Well, that's, you know, that's just a return to form of the Obama White House paying off terrorists. And it is, and it's at a discount rate. But I think that the ransomware people intend to make that up on volume, if you know what I mean. To review where we're at, we are purchasing windmills that will not provide any meaningful power for our country. Apparently from a company approved by the Chinese Communist Party, those windmills are apparently made by slaves in a concentration camp. But cops are literal Nazis. And whiteness is literally the problem in the world. Just if we're all keeping track and racing to work to make sure there isn't more hacking of our nation's energy infrastructure, being dropped off by four or five gas-burning SUVs with petroleum-based tires is the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, this time hiding his transfer out of the SUVs onto his bicycle so he can ride into a militarized installation that exists only for the form of theater. But this is all normal. This is all very normal. This is what the Mockingbird media would have us believe. This is all normal. Now, adding to this, John Kerry, in more testimony, this with the House Foreign Affairs Committee, denied that he is giving Iran's foreign minister information about covert Israeli operations in Syria. Now, surely, John Kerry, who was breaking the law, engaged in diplomacy, when he was not, in fact, a government official, telling Iran and the world, ignore Donald Trump, we're going to do everything but, well, mess with votes to get him out of there. So this question from Representative Scott Perry, a Republican from Pennsylvania. John Kerry, did you provide information to Mr. Zarif on Israeli operations against the Iranian-backed terrorists during or following your tenure as Secretary of State?
On no occasion. Never.
Never. So Mr. Zarif is a liar.
Mr. Zarif may be confused or incorrect, or he's trying to embellish his... What I read about that article said that he was portraying himself as out of the loop and whatever, and quite emotional, apparently, is what I read. And I've seen him be quite emotional, and I can't vouch for why he did or what he said. I'm just telling you, that didn't happen. End of story.
Wow. Quite emotional. In a manner reminiscent of the English king. Is this where I get me a hunting license? I'm not tossing my medals over that fence. Anyone got some medals I can borrow? Climate change is a catastrophe in waiting for the world. That's why I flew on a private jet to accept an award. Now, wait, next time I flew on a commercial jet, but I took my woke mask off. Yeah, he's a believable guy, that John Kerry. The Maha, and this when is this from? 2015, May or March 27, 2015. The Maha loves to take a phrase, rearrange it, and own it. And often he did this to prove a point in just one or two words. Here, Rush explains the fraud of Obama and Iran using just such a technique.
Barack Hussein O came into office claiming and promising to transform the United States of America, and he had said on many occasions he wanted to do it in a Reagan-esque way. Not as Reagan did, but he wanted to be as effective as Reagan. One of the reasons the left hate Reagan is because of his effectiveness. Reagan did, for the 8 years he was in office and many subsequent years, truly transform this country. And he did it with conservatism. Now, the left hates that.
But they nevertheless marveled at Reagan's ability to do it. Obama's made no bones about the fact that he hated what Reagan did, what Reagan stood for, but he marveled at Reagan's ability to do it. And we are witnessing every day the transformation of this country, be it Obamacare, be it the labor force participation rate, 92 million Americans not working but still eating, be it open borders and a welcome mat to anybody who wants to come into the country and make them instantly citizens. No concern for assimilation, because as part of the transformation of America that Obama envisions, we must dilute what is known as the American culture. Now, previous decades of immigration were noteworthy because the immigrants that sought entry to the United States wanted to become Americans. They wanted to participate in the land of the free, the home of the brave. They wanted the freedom that we, as natural-born citizens, had. So whether they came from Italy, whether they came from Poland, whether they came from Ireland, wherever they came from, they maintained their origins and their identities, but they became Americans. They learned to speak English, became their primary language. They did everything they could because they wanted to become Americans. That's what's out the window, among many other things. Now there is no distinct American culture, and to the extent that there is, it is being impugned and blamed. American culture is said to be the reason we're hated around the world, and that's what Obama is trying to fix. He wants us to be loved and respected and adored, and to do that, we've got to sweep away the old America. Racism, bigotry, sexism, homophobia, all of that, we've got to broom it. We've got to welcome anybody who wants to come in, because virtually everybody denied entry to this country probably has relatives who built it in Obama's world. The transformation of the United States is most recently underway in the nuclear negotiations with Iran. And to put it in a nutshell, the manifestation of this particular transformation is the conversion of Iran to an ally and Israel away from allied status. I think there's no other way to look at this. Given what we see, given what we learn, given what we read each and every day, this administration is going out of its way to befriend Iran. This administration is going out of its way to facilitate the Iranian pursuit and acquisition of nuclear weapons. It is clear that this administration believes that Israel is the only nation in that region with nuclear weapons, is a destabilizing agent and one of the reasons why there is so much discord. And it is thought that if the Iranians get a new... Hey, who are we to say that they can't have one anyway? We don't have that right. That's not what America's role in the world is going to be anymore, as per the Obama transformation. This is major. This is a huge reversal. To treat Iran, the nation that has long been acknowledged the state sponsor of terrorism, worldwide sponsor of terrorism, now as an ally.
There it is. And the line. This is how he did it. The Maha. The Obama wanted to reverse Reagan and Iran. Trust but don't verify. What are we seeing, John Kerry? Trust me. Just don't verify what I'm saying. And we all remember Rush using that brilliant technique. And you will remember Rush and his discovery of Pure Talk. You remember that? It's a cell phone service company that provides unlimited talk, text, and 6 gigs of data every month for just $30. And if you go over on your data, they don't charge you. There's likely a lot of money for you to save. Rush spells it all out.
Hey, folks, you know, you can spend all kinds of time deliberating what kind of cell phone you want to own, what kind of cell phone you want to use, but you might spend 10% of that time deciding on your cell phone carrier, if that much. Now, maybe you spend more than 10%, but really, there are options out there you may not know about. Cell phone service has become expensive. You know, I remember back in the days of flip phones. This is before 2007, before the iPhone was invented. The theory was that your service was going to be given to you as long as you paid for the phone. That's the way the experts thought the trend line was, that service is going to be pretty much free, but you got to pay for the phone. Now that's turned upside down. Now the phone costs a pretty penny, as does service. Cell phone service has become expensive. The big brand name carriers charge a lot because, well, they can. So there's another company out there that we want to suggest you look into called Pure Talk, because their focus is on providing you the best cell phone coverage and service for about half the price of the big brand names in cellular service. Pure Talk gives you excellent coverage. It uses the same cell towers as one of the biggest brands. You get unlimited talk, unlimited text, 6 gigs of data for about $30 a month. It's on the same tower that you're probably using now, same towers. And if you go over on your data usage, Pure Talk is not going to charge you for it. Switch to Pure Talk. Keep your phone number just as it is. Pure Talk will help you make that an easy switch. From your cell phone, just dial #250 and then say Pure Talk. #250 and say Pure Talk, and you'll save 50% off your first month. That is #250 and say Pure Talk. You'll have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from Pure Talk. Something to look into.
It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Just breaking news from the Babylon Bee. And yes, Snopes will fact check this. Tony Fauci announces that Pandemic is coming back for a second season. Thrilled audiences around the globe. Producer of the Pandemic TV, Tony Fauci, announced that. Oh, by the way, he also has announced, if you vaccinated, you can take those masks off outside. Like, finally. Why? Well, my numbers are bad. We got a new season coming out. So to review, we've decided to make ourselves, or Joe Biden's dementia has, to make us energy dependent on companies or countries that hate us. Not the people there, but the Chinese Communist Party hates us and hates freedom and all good things. And we're using taxpayer money to facilitate the purchase of windmills made by slave labor in a concentration camp. But John Kerry recognizes that's a problem. But he's not going to stop it. And 7 little kids were found. A rancher found them on his property, including a little infant crawling in the dirt naked, left there no doubt by coyotes. But it's all normal. Everything's good. That's what the mockingbirds would tell you. They spent 12 times the amount of time on Liz Cheney yesterday than they did the economy. Just to review where we're at. There is a rumor. Well, you know what? I'm not going to give that away. I'm going to hold on to that because I want to welcome to the program Kirk from Mandan, North Dakota. Kirk, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. I'm glad you called. Kirk, welcome.
Hey, thanks, Todd, for taking my call. Yeah, I just have a theory. I don't believe the Democrats do anything without a strategy behind it. And I think they're allowing the spigot that's open at the border right now. I believe they're allowing it to be open so they have a number in mind of how many illegals that they'll let in. And then Kamala Harris is going to magically swoop down there, shut off the spigot, looking very presidential, but only after they have a number, a certain number they have in mind of illegal immigrants that are going to repopulate our country and become Democrat voters. I don't think they're Democrats at all. I believe they have a strategy behind everything they do.
So if I were to maybe paraphrase what you're saying, do they operate by a philosophy of never let a good crisis go to waste?
Well, that definitely comes under that category, yeah.
It does. Well, listen, I'm going to tell you something. You have predicted a story we're going to share in the last hour of this program, in the top of the hour monologue, about a rumor, about a wall in Rio Grande. There's a rumor that they're going to begin rebuilding that wall. Legal insurrection has reported this rumor in Rio Grande Valley. So you may be on to something. That's a great call, Kirk. Thank you very much for joining Rush's program with that. They don't. And here's, like, I will admit again, my form of bigotry. It is very, very, very difficult for me to believe that one can rise to the level of being Secretary of State, even John Kerry-style Secretary of State, and be completely stupid. Because decisions like we've been discussing today, they're very literally like, wait, so I don't lay face down in the bath? Why don't I lay face down in the bath? Stupid. Why shouldn't I put a fork in a electrical outlet? I will if I want to. I'm a ketchup heir. Or a husband, something. Condiments, at least. But the other end of this would be corruption. And the scale and scope of that, it boggles the mind. And I have seen the corruption. You want an example? There was a son of a United States congressman with heft. This guy, he had juice, California-based. His son wanted to charge the Republican National Committee $15 million for a $500,000 website. And thought he could get away with that because, well, dad works across the street. And that's minor bull. I'm reluctant to share with you next what we're going to share with you, but it must be shared. We'll get to that in just a second. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Todd Herman, honored to be your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Just had a drive-by caller say about all these factors we've talked about this hour. I can't blame Joe Biden's dementia. This is all being done on purpose. I totally agree. I don't disagree with that assessment at all. When I say Joe Biden's dementia, it's not an attempt to be cruel. Dementia is not funny. I'm simply pointing out the fact that that man is not functionally the president. He is not cognitively able to understand anything below the depth of, oh, man, oh, I forgot my mask. Oh, I'm going to be in such trouble. Come on. There is this that we're going to talk about in the next hour. Something going on in Idaho, where I live. And I'm a little bit reluctant to share this with you, but I will. There are people fleeing California to Idaho, as Rush talked about years ago.
California. A lot of Californians in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, leaving California or having partial residence in these other places.
Now, I grew up over here, so it's a coming home, but I do want to warn particularly liberals from California. Number one, there's no meat in the grocery stores in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. You have to kill it yourself. In the parking lots, you go back and you take a buck knife, and it's called eat what you kill. Secondly, we're still working on the indoor plumbing. So, I mean, but that plays in your favor because, you know, the Sheryl Crow thing, you don't need no fancy indoor plumbing. We come back. Speaking of blue states, congratulations, red states, you're bailing them out. It's Todd Herman, your guide host on the EIB Network this week. What a tremendous honor to be with you on the EIB Network. It is 800-282-2882. And as all days are in my mind, this is a day the Lord has made and the times in which God has decided we shall live. We will get to some sounds of Joe Biden's dementia, reading some prepared remarks that are going to sound like, wow, they took some steps to really reopen this pipeline. And man, they did some smart things. That's really a deceptive way to take this information in. You'll hear this, and we'll get this onto the program thanks to Team EIB, who's constantly scanning the news. If you live in a fiscally responsible state, and you live a fiscally responsible life, this should be a little frustrating to you. This is a continuing series on the shell game, the swindle of something called federal monies. This is the greatest shell game that has ever been played in the history of economics. It dwarfs everything. The federal government and people like Gavin Newsom, who is, of course, mobbed up to the federal government, intend to invent and print and borrow what some people would consider to be money. Other people would consider to be symbols on paper or a series of zeros or placeholders within a computer system. In other words, air. And with that, they intend, in the case of Gavin Newsom, to buy his defense against a recall effort. We talked about this yesterday, that Gavin Newsom, or was it the day before? Gavin Newsom in California, he wants to give people earning, I think, less than $75,000 a year plus undocumented families monies just because of the COVID. On a nationwide basis, there is an effort to take monies from responsible states and to put them into the retirement coffers of not just irresponsible, but criminally irresponsible pension managers in blue states, where you have people and you have retired municipal workers pulling in $350,000 a year for the hard work of not working. And the problem is, the taxpayers are on the hook for that. We promised to give that to them. And I guess we must be true to our word, although the government has no problem coming to us and say, yeah, we know we promised that whole freedom thing and freedom of religion and freedom of the press and all that, but come on, man, we can't keep all our promises. The swindle of the federal dollars works like this. We're so used to hearing on our local news, local officials say the surplus of federal dollars will be helped to ease the impact caused by the pandemic, by which they mean the impact caused by the medically useless, deadly, politically advantageous lockdown of churches, school children, and very small businesses. Not big business. Come on, man. So you'll hear news stories like this, and federal or local officials say federal dollars will help make up the deficit. No. $1 from the state is sucked up, and it goes back to Washington, D.C. Let's follow that dollar off the top of my head. People get paid money to suck that dollar up. They have a pension based upon that dollar. They have vacation time based upon that dollar. Then there are people who are paid to count that dollar and the other dollars. They have pensions and vacations. Then there are people who are paid to put those dollars into accounts and then to steer those dollars back to the states, the many states. But not before they get paid. So to make up the difference, they turn around and borrow once again, almost a theme of the show, being dependent upon countries that don't mean us well, or at least the governments thereof don't. The Chinese Communist Party and other countries who don't have our best interests at heart, we borrow from them to make up the difference. So then that dollar comes back to the state. And let's say it looks like $1.13. Oh, it's a surplus. No, it's a shell game. Because the $1.13 has attached to it rules and diktats invented by the people behind Joe Biden's dementia. And yet, it's the blue states that are going to be bailed out with all of this. But it's completely normal. This isn't the sign of any form of structural economic concern whatsoever that we're teetering on a $200 trillion deficit. Not to mention this. I love this. If you're an accountant or a business owner who's had to deal with accountants or a tax lawyer, just know this. The United States, when I say $200 trillion in debt, I'm talking about the actual debt, the unfunded liabilities. Those are the books you keep in the back room. Those aren't the books you show the accountants. This is mob stuff, guys. Hey, Tony, the IRS is coming. We show them the good books or the bad books. Show them the public books. What are you, weed? But it's normal. Now, I could make this all complicated. Or I could just say this. Listen here to Rush Limbaugh describe precisely what the left would do under cover of COVID.
These blue state governors are keeping their states shut down, and they're demanding that the red states that are going back to work pay for them. Red state governors like Kemp in Georgia and elsewhere who are opening up, Florida, DeSantis, trying to get businesses back up and running, restaurants, you name it. These red states, blue state guys are sitting around keeping themselves locked down, crying, it's so unfortunate, it's just bad shape, it's so bad. And they're demanding that the federal government, which means tax revenue from you, be used to prop them up and support. You know what I would do? If I lived in California, if I lived in the state of Washington, If I lived in New York, if I lived in Massachusetts, you know, I would tell these stupid, idiotic governors, I would say no property tax if I can't work. No tax of any kind if I can't work. If you're going to prevent me from working, I'm not going to pay you a dime in taxes. How can I? But they're going to be out there demanding taxes, collecting taxes, property taxes, this, while preventing their own citizens from working. Gavin Newsom, California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Colorado, and our legislative leaders, meaning in California, have joined together to ask the federal government for $1 trillion to protect our schools, our public health, and public safety services. Without federal support, says Governor Newsom, states will be forced to make impossible decisions. They have been mismanaged. These are blue states. They've been mismanaged. They have been run by a bunch of incompetents. They can't print money. They're out of it, and they're looking at this arrival of the virus as an opportunity. It's no wonder they want to crash. They figure that's the only way that they're going to ever be able to find any hope of being made whole. Coming up with money to fund their pension obligations and all that is gigantic federal bailouts. In case you're just joining us, Governor Newsom has requested essentially a $1 trillion bailout. He has said without federal support, California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Colorado will be forced to make impossible decisions. They can't survive. We can't survive, he's saying, without $1 trillion of federal money to protect our schools, our public health, and our public safety services. Now, what's obviously going on here is these states, as blue states, with Democrats having run these states for who knows how many years, they're in horrible fiscal and financial shape. They have unfunded pension liabilities that they'd never be able to pay. They have spent money buying votes, buying welfare, they have just spent money that they never, ever were going to see generated by economic activity and taxes. And they see the arrival of the virus as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to have their states crash with the virus taking the blame for it happening instead of them and their predecessors and their policies being the reason these states crash. So that's why they want the economic slowdown to keep on. That's why these blue state governors are going to keep their economies locked down and shut down. They know their states, this is going to happen to them at some point. They want the virus getting blamed so that they will get a federal bailout or at least have an easier shot at it. So let me tell you what I think. Since you're right, I didn't close the loop on this. I know this is easy for me to say because I don't live in one of these states. I don't live in California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Colorado, and many of you do. But if these people, these governors, the Democrat Party, if they are allowed to crash their states' economies in pursuit of a federal bailout, and if they get that bailout, they are not going to change at all. They're going to keep coming out for bailouts. They're going to keep running their states into the ground.
And they have. And just for fun fact, in case you don't know, Washington State at this point that Rush just mentioned, the so-called governor there, Jay Inslee, has literally no plan to open. He's too busy seizing control of churches by edict. Pretty remarkable. Joe Biden said something in the White House today through his dementia in a prepared, statement he was providing us. It almost sounds like it's a great idea. And yet, let's look at the subtext thereof when we continue. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Did you take any of the extension courses, the Limbaugh Institute? I took a summer course on the need for conservatism in times of crisis, and the left will flee to that. Joe Biden's, well, when there's the times of crisis, they often flee to that. Often, as we just talked about in the last segment, when they take a crisis and decide to use it to destroy the country, as they did with the COVID flu and the spending and the lockdowns and the restructuring of society, et cetera, ad nauseum, they just go straight full on tyranny. But when their political futures are at stake, Joe Biden's dementia just spoke with the press. And he said a couple of things that on the face of them make sense. And as you dig through the subtext, it just proves the timeless principles of what we've what Rush talked about on the show for decades. First of all, listen closely to this. This is about the Colonial Pipeline hack. We've learned that, according to Bloomberg, Colonial Pipeline decided to pay $5 million to the hackers who put the ransomware on their systems. I made a prediction, and I stand by it. I bet you that the White House pressured Colonial Pipeline. You're going to pay, or we're going to find all sorts of things you did wrong. We're going to dig through your malfeasance. The DOJ is going to come to bear. Remember, I mean, during the Obama years, they went after a guitar-making company. Gibson? I think it was Gibson Guitars. They decided to go shut them down because they didn't like the wood they were bringing in, when really what they didn't like was the politics involved. So here, listen to this. This is Joe Biden's dementia wants you to hear the word of the name of a country while he talks about the Colonial Pipeline.
The FBI has released details on the attack so others can take steps to prevent from being victimized like Colonial has been. We do not believe, I emphasize, we do not believe the Russian government was involved in this attack. But we do have strong reason to believe that the criminals who did the attack are living in Russia. That's where it came from. We're from Russia. We have been in direct communications with Moscow about the imperative for responsible countries to take decisive action against these ransomware networks.
As I listen to him speak, I notice it's Russia, Russia, Russia. They want that. That's the narrative. But then I also, I'm picturing the drive-by media saying, it's just remarkable the way he uses the whisper, the change of tone, the intimacy to just really deliver a powerful. Remember that? When in fact, he just, it's terrible because it sounds cruel. He doesn't have the life energy. Now, in this clip, as you hear this Biden's dementia in this clip, please recall our Limbaugh Institute education on leftists fleeing to conservatism when there's a need for actual efficiency.
First, we relaxed rules for pipeline operators to provide flexibility for emergency personnel to help manually get portions of the pipeline up and running earlier this week. Secondly, over the weekend, we reviewed and worked with the company to get a portion of the pipeline system from North Carolina to Maryland to operate under manual control and deliver its existing inventory. In addition, we put in place emergency orders that lifts the hours restrictions and allowed states to lift weight restrictions for tank truck drivers to be on the road. This allows those drivers to work more and carry more fuel to the affected regions. Third, the Environmental Protection Agency issued a targeted 20-day waiver of standards in several states to give fuel suppliers more flexibility to use available fuels where they're needed, which will boost the fuel supply. And those last two actions have made tens of millions of gallons of additional fuel available each day to be able to be distributed. Put another way, the extraordinary measures the administration has taken, we estimate, sent enough gas to stations to fill the tanks of over 5 million vehicles in the last few days. Fourthly, as part of an effort to use every possible means to accelerate fuel deliveries, last night I granted a waiver of the Jones Act to fuel suppliers. This allows non-U.S. flagged vessels to transport refined fuel products from the Gulf of Mexico to affected areas, and we'll grant additional waivers if necessary. These steps are temporary, but they will remain in place until full service is fully restored. This is a whole-of-government response to get more fuel more quickly to where it's needed and to limit the pain being felt by American customers.
Dang. Hold on just a second. I'm all a Twitter and a twutter with the great inspiring. Pardon me. So what do we have? They could have stopped this earlier and not paid the ransom if we didn't have regulations saying you can't manually go back to safe manual behaviors that you've had at your energy producing plants for decades. We're going to waive the Jones Act so there can be competition to bring fuel to our country. All of this is, we're going to stop doing what we do to make things harder to do in the country, because right now we need them to be easy to do. It's remarkable. See how the Limbaugh Institute education implies? And all this is going to be about fuel and costs and things going up. And Biden had said that's not happening, but apparently it is. In fact, way back in the summer of 2009, Rush posed the following question, and it's so funny how it applies today.
Let me ask you a quick question out there. How many of you think, in your own mind, economy is not that bad? I'm able to get gas, I'm able to go to the movies, go to the grocery, not that bad. You remember when gasoline last spring, summer, fall, whatever it was, hit $4 a gallon? That's all we heard every day, all day, all the cable networks. How $4 a gallon gasoline was destroying people's lives. And they were interviewing people with the hard luck stories and how they couldn't get to the grocery store and they were cutting back on food. Remember, now let me ask you, we are in a recession deeper than any since 1980-82. You see any of the hard luck stories in the state-run media that would lead you to believe the economy is as bad as... No, you don't. And that's one of the reasons why you may not think it's as bad as it is. But the numbers don't lie.
And new house building is going to be harder and more expensive as lumber costs increase, as fuel costs increase, as courtesy of the party's decision to pay people more money to not work than to go to work... Costs for people who build homes are going to go up, and we're going to see a housing crisis. And the Mockingbird media will do the same thing they've done. They pretend this is all due to the pandemic. No, it's not. It's due to the political decisions around the pandemic. Speaking of pandemia, who do you think's more afraid to go out of the house? People who have gotten the mRNA injections or people who haven't? That's coming up. Yes, it is Todd Herman, your guide host this week, 800-282-2882. Question for you, before we talk to my fellow Rush listeners. What does this mean in your mind? I as I read this headline I'm about to read to you and the data that corresponds to it, I remember listening to Rush talk about never in American history has our response to things been hide inside. And I will tell you that, and I've warned Team EIB, I am so obsessive about the response to this COVID flu. It is the biggest, most destructive swindle I've ever seen. The lives taken by these lockdowns. It's just one day, the stories are beginning to leak out. ProPublica had a piece about people who put off cancer treatments because they were scared to go to the hospital because the party had told them you'll die if you walk into a hospital because of the COVID flu. This is from Morning Consult. Many vaccinated Americans are still uncomfortable returning to public activities. The U.S. economy needs them. Well, you have spent a year and a half terrifying people about a virus that for which the largest majority of them never needed any form of mRNA injection or vaccine. I understand the reason for it. I understand. I feel awful when I talk about this because I feel like President Trump was obsessed with saving American lives. I really do. And I think that at that time, there were so many lies circulating about the COVID flu that we're going to see 30 million dead people. And there was a time when the average American believed 30 million people had died from this. Just fathom that. 10% of our country, they believe, had died. That's how twisted the Mockingbird media was around this. Now you have these people that are the vaccinated people afraid are willing to go on a cruise, 17%, unvaccinated, 37%, attending a concert, 25% will do that if they're vaccinated, 42% if they're not. Attending a renting a car. And still there the vaccinated people are behind, or the people who've got the mRNA injections at least. Why? Because these people are traipsing around in woke masks that never, ever had a chance to inhibit the flow of respiratory viruses. They don't. It's the physics don't work. Now you have Fauci. Fauci will say whatever must be said at the time he switches positions constantly. This now. Well, if you're vaccinated and you're outside, put aside your mask. You don't need to wear it. You've been saying since the shots began, well, we're still going to need to wear masks because asymptomatic people can pass on the virus. No, they can't. They can't. They don't. You've said it many times. Asymptomatic transmission is never. You know what? If they want to destroy confidence in the public health system, boom, boom, winner, winner, chicken dinner, you done did it. You done did it. And look, the left has been so successful at making their voters victims of fear. Here's Rush from 2015 proving just that point.
I have to be honest. I think a whole lot of people in this country are scared for the future. All walks of life because of the state of the economy, the disunity, the strife. There used to be, I mean, we've always had divisions and we've always had disagreements. But the lines that are dividing us have gotten wider and bigger and more pronounced. And it all just doesn't feel right to a lot of people. People who have lost their jobs fear they're never going to find another one that pays them what they were earning. People who have jobs fear they're going to lose theirs. People fear they're going to lose their health care and not be able to afford it. People fear this. And this is on purpose because when you have this kind of fear, and these students are illustrating it, when you have this kind of fear, where do you turn to? You turn to the biggest source of money you can find. In this case, it's the government. You turn to the biggest source of power you can find. You don't turn inward and rely on yourself because you think it doesn't matter. These kids have been told the deck's stacked against them. They got no chance because of racism or bigotry or what have you. Other people don't think that they've got a fair shake because of whatever this or that. But whatever it is, people know that things are not right. Something just doesn't feel right. This is not the way the country deals with problems. It's not the way we've always solved problems. The whole idea of the American dream now being in decline, I mean, this unsettles people. The students are unsettled and frightened and scared, they say, I think, over ridiculous things that are largely made up. But it doesn't mask the fact that there is an unsettledness that spread over many people in this country. With liberals in charge, the lesson is clear. There isn't a safe space anywhere in this country. Even people who embrace liberalism feel unsafe. Even people who embrace liberalism and vote for it feel scared and unsettled. So universities have become the home. Universities have become, in fact, what I would call the safe spaces for community organizers, for community rabble-rousers, for shakedown artists. The people the president cheers, the people the president encourages to continue doing what they're doing. Anti-intellectual bullies who cannot stand for diversity of thought, who will not tolerate diversity of opinion. Organizing young radicals and turning them against their parents and turning them against the United States of America, that's the passion of the modern-day Democrat Party and its figurative titular head, Barack Hussein O. And what we have on parade, if you've ever wondered what I mean by young skulls full of mush, just turn on your TV and listen for 5 minutes to an interview of anybody on campus at the University of Missouri or now at Yale or at Harvard. No matter where you look, every place in this country that is run by liberal Democrats and has been for years is an abject total disaster with unchecked misery and unhappiness and anger and rage. How can that be?
Take those words, move them forward to today, and listen to this. We're talking about the fact that vaccinated people and people who've gotten the mRNA injections are more afraid to go outside than people who have not. Alex Berenson on Twitter points this out from the New York Times, the upshot. With hugs and haircuts, U.S. epidemiologists are beginning to go outside, start returning carefully to everyday life. 55% of epidemiologists in the United States won't hang outside with no masks. 70% won't eat inside. The people who are trained to read actuarial data in terms of risk profiles who could in 5 seconds glance at a chart and understand this virus is so completely age and health condition stratified that most people are at more risk from the seasonal flu. And I mean that with an exclamation point, italicized and underlined and bolded for that matter. But they have gone through these colleges and this fear system, and I question how many of them believe in anything greater than their own intellect, like such as the skepticism of others or are willing to be skeptical of. See, I think this might be the problem, that they've been through these indoctrination centers called colleges where you are not to disagree with the much vaunted prof. You're never to disagree because you step outside the ideological bounds, you're in trouble. Well, that's extended into the hard sciences. And one need look no further than this. All the glaring contradictions. All the people not wearing the woke masks when they think they're not on camera. Or just take this. Just take this. As we're gearing up for travel season, and people have had to have the 18-foot Q-tips shoved up their beaks to fly in airplanes, illegal immigrants weren't being tested for the COVID. And children were being packed into what used to be cages and are now luxury resorts at the W Hotel. Well, when they're Biden cages. We didn't test for COVID with illegal immigrants, but to get on an airplane? Even those glaring contradictions didn't somehow wake people from the fear-induced coma slumber. Fear coma. We'll come back on the EIB Network. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. I say, I want to make sure we get to these calls. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. We're just talking about the new Fauci edict. Oh, you don't need those masks when you're outside. That's never been the case. I've never said that you need a mask outside. I mean, look, we've always been at war with Asiana. It's well known. Just put that down there. Can we do that take again? It's just remarkable to watch as this continues to keep people. Now they're saying that people are afraid to go to work. Well, they're afraid they're getting paid more. Meanwhile, we didn't test illegal immigrants coming into the country. Let's talk to Paul in Superior, Wisconsin. Paul, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. Glad you called, Paul. Welcome.
Thanks, Todd. You know, we're told the conventional wisdom is that all the illegal aliens coming across our border are Democrat voters in perpetuity. But it just doesn't make sense on its face, given the fact that they are fleeing countries that are Marxist and socialist and destroyed the country. So I'm wondering, where's the grassroots movement in this country to reach out to these people, the Hispanics in this country that love freedom, love America, to reach out to them and sit them down and say, look, we know the Democrats are offering you all this and that, and they let you in, but you need to really think this through before you vote. The country's going to end up as the same crap hole that you left. And you know what? When it goes bad here, there's not going to be anywhere else to run.
President Trump did that, and he was seeing gains in Hispanic voters and African-American voters, black voters. And you know what the key thing Trump did was? You know what it was? He showed up. He showed up. Republicans are very traditionally uncomfortable in circumstances like that. I've been in the room with folks when they're going to like a neighborhood of say, a black neighborhood in Maryland. I've sat in cars and people, it's not racism. It's, I don't like to speak in public, and I'm afraid because these people aren't going to like me. It's apprehension. Trump had no apprehension. His personality powered his politics. The other thing he did is he did not code shift. Code shifting is a sociological phrase. People code shift. You act one way at work, you act another way with your buddies. If you work in a professional setting, maybe you grew up blue collar, you will code shift, revert back into, I don't want to say revert, but You act more blue-collar around your blue-collar buddies. It's called code shifting. Trump didn't code shift. I mean, look, Hillary Clinton code shifting. I don't feel no ways, turd. It's the most cringeworthy thing in the world. I remember my grandma and grandpa on the back porch, and they said, you don't feel no ways, turd. That never happened. Trump never did that. He was Trump in front of Hispanic audiences and black audiences. He never tried that. He didn't placate. That's the fear so many Republicans have, is I need to go speak to the Hispanic voter. I need a binder full of Hispanics. How about if you be a person? Right? How about if you do that? It would work as well in public health. Hey, guys, in public health, it's okay for you to come along and say, wow, that Fauci really is a grifter. Dang it. We really apologize, you guys. We got full-on rolled by that Fauci the grifter. You could do that. You know what? Public health authorities, you would regain so much respect. Tom in Santa Barbara, California, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host this week. We got about a minute and a half together. Tom, I'm so glad you called. Welcome.
I thank you for having me on your show. I've been listening, and I want to say, you know, all the concerns about the, you know, the coronavirus and masks and social distancing and all that stuff, you know, I have to say it's really amazing how much they have gotten the country to obey things that have nothing to do with science. But I want to say something today, and I'm so surprised that other virologists haven't come forward and actually admitted to this. But I'm gonna, if I could argue to you and prove that this was nothing about producing an effective vaccine, what you would have to wonder what the country's and what Dr. Fauci's motive really is. I'm going to say it. So coronavirus, a.k.a. The virus that causes the disease, COVID-19, is a single-stranded messenger RNA virus. What that means is it's only got one strand when it replicates. And when single-stranded RNA viruses replicate, they make a lot of mistakes. And when they do that, the initial vaccine that may have been effective, may not have been, but may have been effective to immunize you against that initial strand won't be effective against any strand of virus after it continues to replicate inside of your body. We know that. Dr. Fauci knows that. And I maintain, and I'm going to argue, since this is the case, that the once this virus replicates inside of yourself, that the initial vaccine that you may or may not get is going to be completely ineffective. We know this. Why do we know this? Because if we could have develop an ability to make a vaccine, an effective vaccine for other messenger RNA viruses, single-stranded viruses like HIV, don't you think we would have done so? These viruses are very sloppy in replicating it. When you have double-stranded viruses like chickenpox, you can make a vaccine. It'll work from day one. It'll work in 10 years down the line. You don't have to change it. Messenger RNA viruses are notorious for changing themselves. And again, like I said, they're called sloppy replicators. So the vaccine that's out now, yes, go ahead.
No, it's just that you're starting to break up a little bit and the clock is ticking in my eye. What you said, and I've studied so much about this, I'm tracking you. And what on the science front, I've been reading about the leaky vaccines and that, in fact, natural immunity is broader and more protective. What's particularly anger-inducing to me about this is Fauci's role in selling this into the administration. And Fauci's role in saying to the president of the United States, this thing is like smallpox. I'm not saying that he used those words, but all of a sudden he acted that way. I think it was the biggest disservice to an American president and therefore to the American people in history, Fauci to Trump. I appreciate the call, Tom. Thanks for sharing that with us. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Coming up next hour, if your political movement involves making life better for human traffickers, what exactly is your movement about? If that's a byproduct of your political movement, that sex traffickers and cartels are just gleeful, what is your movement exactly? Just asking, not to be impolite, just want to know. Speaking of that, Rush had an elegant and simple explanation for American presidents.
The president of the United States, number one law enforcer. He is the number one defender and protector of the country, its people, its Constitution.
Ah, I liked those days. I loved that. You know, when you think back at those times and we had presidents who protected the American people and Constitution, them were good times. So what happens when there is a political movement that's making life better for sex traffickers and human traffickers? Let's talk about that next on the EIB Network. And huge thanks to my friends at KQNT 590 AM in Spokane, letting me sit in the studios again. It's 800-282-2882. If you'd like to join us on this day the Lord has made for us as a gift for us in these times in which he's decided we will live. There is, I'm excited. I get to finally explain the phrase Kafka trapping. I love this phrase, Kafka trapping. That will be in the next segment. It's important to understand because the left does this to us. One of the best tricks that the left has done is they have cornered the language of compassion. And in cornering the language of compassion, they've sort of got first brand status in this. And the first brand status is sort of the generic status. You go into a restaurant, you order a Coke, and they'll often say to you, is Pepsi okay? And you go, yeah, it's fine. Then there's some people who are adherents to the social justice organization that also sells Coke, you know, side hustles, selling the sugar water, which is tasty, but the social justice is sort of the main thing. But, you know, Pepsi will work. Get a Kleenex. It's the generic. So it takes place in the mind of, oh, okay, that's the thing that I blow my beak into. And that's the bubbled sugar water I drink because it makes me feel good. Coke. So people develop this first brand status. It's a really powerful status. People only have the capacity to remember usually three brand names of things. I used to, this will embarrass a bunch of people, but I used to be a guest lecturer at UCL Anderson School of Media for returning MBA students and young wannabe MBAs. And I had an exercise we used to do in this, but brand hangers and brand position. So the Democrats, by owning compassion as being the brand of compassion, they get away with everything. And it helps to have the Mockingbird media on your side, fully and completely on your side, unquestionably on your side. But look at illegal immigration. We shared, was it yesterday or the day before on Rush's program, we shared the story of a rancher out checking his property. And look, when you're in borderland, you check your property. Well, A, if you have a big ranch, you check your property, you check your fence lines, you check your animals, you check. And he ran across 7 abandoned children. Now just imagine your feeling. On your property, there is an infant, naked and dust covered, crying. All the kids under the age of 7. And there's no parent. There's no adult. That's the compassion of a system that is encouraging and making easy the life of human traffickers whose sole job is to get you there. That's how we see the videos of little kids being dropped off of 13, 15-foot fences. Okay, they're in America. And the right fails to explain the compassion of keeping the lifeboat in order. And I really do believe this is the proper metaphor for us as a country on the globe. 20% of the world's, we are 5% of the world's population. We've taken in 20% of their displaced peoples. This is a literal example of killing. Just the golden goose, is that cliched enough to make sense? Continuing to flood the system, to flood the lifeboat of the world with people who are expecting something, expecting aid, expecting succor. And eventually it's gone. Eventually the boat can't float. The food is gone. The fuel's out. I mean, do I communicate this clearly enough? But the left parks this stuff under this brand hanger of compassion. When in fact, if you want to screw up a family or an organization, don't have rules. Have moods. If you want to make a kid crazy, have moods in your home. Not rules. Some days you can sit on the couch. The other days you get slapped silly. I'll slap you upside the head for sitting on the couch. But I could sit here yesterday, but that was yesterday. Or demonstrate rules for some and not for, other, for others. How come my sister gets to stay up late? Because I like her better than you. No, it's just tried this in the home. And we're a great big extension of a home. There is no compassion in this. There is no compassion in creating a system like by which you take the world's safe house. That's what we are. We're the world's safe house. that's being made unsafe with every single time we allow a coyote to enter this country and to drop someone off. Those people are trafficked and they're likely to be abused here into forms of labor slavery or sex slavery. It happens here. 900% increase in migrant encounters in April compared to last year. 900% more human beings brought here. 900% more opportunities to take these young kids and say, your parents wanted you out of the garbage hole of Marxism that they're in. They sent you here, and now you're an indentured servant for the next 10 or 15 years. But the crazy thing is, the coyotes and the cartels, they don't keep their word, their contracts. Those things can end. And no, we decided it's 40 years that you work for us without pay or very little or sustenance. And let's step in front of this. Laws are compassionate. Order is compassionate. God could have set the world up so that there were land sharks. He could have. He could decide today, I'm going to invent plants that can run and eat you. He could do that. God could say, you know what would be kind of funny? What if I was to make one of those Venus flytraps, but it can run and chase after people and eat them? Well, it would be completely disordered. And this is so remarkable that we have a political party inserting disorder into the body politic, into the body society, and they get away with saying it's compassion. The compassion is, let's make the safe house safe. The compassion is, let's apply the consistencies and restraint that made it a safe house to begin with. And let's apply the sort of American philanthropy that's made us by far the biggest giver of non-official and official foreign aid. I prefer unofficial. Charity trumps taxes. It always will, because the people receive it in love and it's given in love. Back in 2018, the Maha talked about how these migrants or illegal immigrant caravan organizers were using women and children as human shields.
On a caravan business, they should be arrested. They're not going to be charged or arrested. And the reason they're not going to be is because it would require us to separate them from their families. And so the bottom line is, these people are going to get away with it. They're getting away with whatever they have done in regards to violating American law and crossing the border illegally. Here it is. And it's from the AP. No one arrested in border clash will be prosecuted. That's what it is. There have been arrests, but they're not going to be prosecuted. No criminal charges will be filed against any of the 42 people associated with a caravan of Central American migrants who were arrested in a clash that ended with U.S. authorities firing tear gas into Mexico to counter rock throwers. The AP has, this story is filled with so much garbage. Tear gas. It turns out, this is the bottom line, not a single person in that mob of 500 migrants who tried to force their way across the border is going to be prosecuted. 42 of them were arrested. And get this, the Associated Press admits that charges were not filed because the administration generally doesn't separate families. What? Wait a minute, I thought that's what Trump's administration did do. I thought that's been the meme or the narrative for weeks now, since this whole issue of asylum and the caravan began. The Trump administration is just without any compassion whatsoever, separating mothers from their little children. But now the AP says that the Trump administration doesn't generally separate families. Therefore, we're not going to prosecute. So I guess when it's good news, i.e., members of the caravan arrested not being prosecuted, that's great news to the AP and, of course, the American left, then I guess that it's okay to acknowledge that the Trump administration is not separating families. The Border Patrol says that those arrested Sunday for illegal entry included 27 men, the other 15 are women and children, and that many more were not arrested because they were children or parents accompanying the children, which once again proves the caravan organizers put the women and children at the front of the attack to use them as human shields, especially since the vast majority of the caravan are young men.
You ever been to the White House? It's quite a process to get in, really. Well, when you could get in before the militarized installation, which is all theater. I mean, if you're going to go into the White House tour, there's a process. You sign up in advance. I'm certain they background screen you. In fact, I know they do. There's ropes keeping you from areas you're not to go in the house you own. There's certain times of day, certain numbers of people allowed at once. Order. The chaos being brought to our southern border is disorder. If we are one great body of people, what is the other word for disorder in the body? Disease. There are people whose politics is about making the body politic, the American body, the human body, all of us sick. I cannot tell you how excited I am to finally be able to explain the phrase Kafka trapping and to share with you a great bit of analysis from Coco Jr. here at EIB, who worked for some time with the MAHA. You'll see the joining of, or the continuing of the education from the Limbaugh Institute through Dean's words when we come back. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. Thank you to all the people whose names are never shared enough who put the show together as a labor of love. And I just walk in and get to talk about stuff. Easiest part of the whole endeavor is visiting with you at 800-282-2882. So a member of the EIB family, Dean Karyanis, who's known as Coco Jr., is a writer, also has a history podcast, history author show on iHeartRadio, has a piece in the Washington Times that gives me an excuse to talk about Kafka trapping. And then we get to top this off with Rush reminding us that the left, they never find frustration or anger from people on the political right to be anything but disordered and wrong and out of order and dangerous, whereas anger from the left, well, that's purely understandable. It comes from the goodness, the warmth and gold of the human heart. So Dean makes a great comparison, and the headline is Capitals and Rangers Blood on the Ice Tells Cold Truth About Justice. Let's hope official Washington hears the scorn being heaped on their hometown Capitals for forward Tom Wilson's beatdown of two New York Ranger players. I have no skate to grind against the Caps, he writes, but this sad episode has the potential to teach us about cries of foul play across the political spectrum. The lesson is clear as a freshly Zambonied ice. When people feel they've been denied or they're denied justice, they'll take the law into their own hands, and the whole culture suffers. That you or I might not see a particular play or a court ruling as dirty doesn't matter. There's always troublemakers eager to sing another somebody done someone the wrong song. It's just that them we must squelch. This is the key piece. He's writing about an incident of violence that, I mean, even in hockey terms is pretty bad. Incident occurred when this Wilson punched a Rangers winger, Paul Bovenich, in the back of the skull while he lay defenseless. Next, he dragged Artemi, the breadman Parnadin, down by the hair and slammed his face into the ice. Dean writes, it was a berserker rage worthy of Wolverine, the X-Men inspired, incidentally, by Dr. Hook, a goon from the 1977 Paul Newman classic Slapshot. He's talking about justice denied, turning into vigilantism on the ice. This is what the left has done that has led to violence from the right. I don't excuse people making bad decisions. I don't excuse people saying, hey, let's break into the Capitol. I also don't ignore the fact that there were leftist agitators there. I don't ignore that at all. More to my point, and perhaps to Dean's concern, is this is continuing, this disparate treatment. There are people who are accused of breaking into the Capitol in solitary confinement in D.C., and only Lizzie Warren and I think Bernie Sanders will speak out against this solitary confinement. Meanwhile, Black Lives Matter
agitators and terrorists continue to do whatever they want to do whenever they want to do it to whomever they want to do it. People see this. They see this disparagement or this this disparity in justice, and it rightly angers them. We are to be one nation under God. We are to be laws for everybody, apply to everybody. But we see already there's a different law for Rudy Giuliani than there are for Hillary Clinton. They never went and searched her home. There's this thing called Kafka trapping. I learned about this from my friends who have a great Facebook page that tracks the homeless industrial complex in big West Coast cities. It's called Safe Seattle. Kafka trapping is where your enemy makes you so angry that when you finally act out, they step back and go, oh, that's dangerous rage. Where did that come from? Kafka trapping. Rush explained to us that in the eyes of the party, the anger of jihadists and domestic terrorists is always justified, that emotion is only dangerous when conservatives are angry.
I'm getting a little tired of everybody in the establishment, everybody in the media talking about how anger is the driving force of this, as though it is a disqualifier, as though the anger that is propelling this election makes the results illegitimate. Let me throw something at you here on this. See, I think the anger is totally understandable. I think it's called for. But how come when some downtrodden group in America, when the gay lobby is mad, we're supposed to take time out and understand the rage and learn from it? When Saudi Islamists hijack 3 airplanes and crash the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and another Washington target, why do we take time out to say, gee, why do they hate us? What have we done to make them so mad? And then we're told that we must not react irrationally here. We must try to understand their rage. Why? Because it's our fault, we're told. It's something that we did as a nation. State Department had seminars after 9/11. What did we do to make them hate us? But you notice in this anger, it's directed where? It's directed to Washington establishment. The Washington establishment ever saying, we need to pause. We need to have a timeout. We need to find out why they're so mad at us. We need to just go, what have we done wrong? Wouldn't that be the consistent thing? Except that's not the case. In the case of the anger on the Republican side propelling this primary season, everybody is saying it's irrational, it's kooky, it's irresponsible, it's insane. Nobody is saying, hey, why are they mad? What did we do to make them so mad? Maybe we need a seminar or two over here at some lobbyist's office to figure out why they're so mad at us. Why is the anger propelling the Republican primary vote automatically disqualified as unhinged, irrational, and yet the anger of terrorists blowing us to smithereens, the anger of illegal immigrants breaking our laws to get in the country, the anger of every minority group ticked off and basically being unhappy in life, we're supposed to stop, we're supposed to understand the rage, we're supposed to learn from it, and what we're supposed to learn from it is that it's our fault. Okay, well, I'd like to turn that right around on the Republican and the entire Washington establishment. Why don't you people take a little time out instead of mischaracterizing the anger? Why don't you follow your own guidelines and try to learn from it? Why don't you try to ask yourself, what have you done that made everybody so mad? Folks, don't let them do this to you. They're trying to make you think that you are a wacko. Some of you may be, but I mean, not because of your anger. Do not let them convince you that there's something wrong with you because your emotions are at a feverish pitch in this campaign. They ought to be. Well, I mean, in a large group of people, you're going to have a certain percentage of them going to be kooks. And most kooks actually don't know who they are. If they did, they wouldn't be doing what they're doing, right? It's important in policy in dealing with these various things.
So Rush describes this phenomena to this T, that what we're seeing, and this is, I think, Dean's concern in this great piece in the Washington Times, you'll be able to find on rushlimbaugh.com. The party, the left, the technocrats, the mockingbird media, they intend to continue this disparate treatment. And every time there is a response from someone not on the left, not of the party, they intend to go, oh, the danger. We need to fence off the entire Capitol forevermore because of the danger of the right. We'll come back on the EIB Network. Todd Herman, your guide host this week.
Well, we were just talking about this guy earlier in the week, this guy who's paid to pretend to be smart, Matt Iglesias. He's the guy. We had Rush responded this, you know, Rush's love of science. This guy's a writer and editor, slow, boring. He's been at Vox, etc. Matt Iglesias. Listen to this bit of analysis. This is my Matt Iglesias voice. Oh, the pipeline was Obama's Katrina. If nobody died in Katrina and everything was fine after 2 days of mild anxiety. Man, burning it up with some deep thinking there. Do you remember when there was the media just loved every single time a retired military person had something to say about President Trump? They dove on it. Do you remember? I cannot recall this guy's name, and that makes me unbelievably happy. I am so happy I cannot recall this guy's name. My friends who served in the military, particularly those who served in combat, described them as a paper pusher type senior leader, just paid to push paper. And he was made to be a great hero because he went to the hill before they installed the militarized fence. And he spoke truth to power. And the behind the scenes people who worked for the guy in the military were saying, what? That's a paper pusher. But he was to be a hero. There are, according to the Epoch Times, which should change its name on radio to Epoch, because that's how it's spelled, 120 retired U.S. military officers warn of conflict between Marxism and constitutional freedom. And among them are retired generals. Conservative media will report this, and it kind of goes back to what we just talked about in the last segment. The Mockingbird media is in on this trip of they'll treat some things one way, another quite the other. And it's not just bias, it's participation. It's not just bias, it's collusion. People are going to get to a point where they can't trust anything and it all falls apart, and the media is pushing them in that direction. Right? This is a dangerous thing that we have going on when now you have retired military saying we are about to fall into the grip of Marxism under Joe Biden's dementia and whoever is in fact running things in D.C. because none of us believe it's Joe Biden. And here's Rush himself, right? Despite all the efforts, despite all the things that Obama tried to turn the military into a foreign service organization, into a foreign aid, into a philanthropy, or now Joe Biden's dementia is attempting to turn them into a social justice organization. In some degrees, he's winning by hiring as generals, or rather promoting as generals, people who will buy that nonsense, the social justice nonsense. And here's the Maha himself reminding us of what the purpose of the military actually is.
The president of the United States, number one law enforcer, he is the number one defender and protector of the country, its people, its constitution, and we just don't see, by virtue of behavior and policies implemented, we just don't see he recognizes that. Instead, we see a president who seems to believe he leads a country that has committed sin after sin after sin and must now pay a price for that. What are we to think when we hear our own president say he doesn't believe in concepts like leadership and victory and winning? What are we supposed to think? We're not irrational. We hear a president say, I don't believe in that stuff. That's old-fashioned. I first heard him say it about Afghanistan 2009 when he said, I don't like this concept of victory. When I think of victory, I think of poor Emperor Hirohito being marched to the battleship Missouri, forced to sign surrender papers. That's not who we are. That's just not American values. I said, not? Long ago, I reminded people of some great words a former friend of mine and a late friend, great Marine from Sacramento, California, B.T. Thomas, said he was a staunch Democrat but hated the anti-war movement, just despised it. And there was something going on at the time I lived in Sacramento. I forget what it was. He was inspired and motivated to write a letter to the editor in opposition to it. And it was about leftists not realizing the purpose of the military and what its objectives were. So he spelled it out in the letter to the editor. He said, the purpose of armies and the purpose of war is to kill people and break things. That's what war is. You kill people and break things, and you keep going until your opponent surrenders and apologizes to you. That's what war is.
And if you're not committed to take it to that end, you don't start it. And if you don't understand the purpose of armies is to kill people and break things, then you don't have one and you don't use it. Because if you have an army and you send it to war and it starts killing people and breaking things and then you get upset and start pulling it back, you are irresponsible. And I think we've reached a point in time in American cultural evolution here, as evidenced by what we see on campus after campus after campus. There's the rampant ignorance of the purpose of war, the purpose of the military, the purpose of armies, and how you define success in military involvement. You tell your average, scared college child today that the purpose of armies is to kill people and break things, and they'll ask for the nearest phone book or phone booth if they can find one to go hide. Well, we don't have a leader who accepts the idea that the purpose of armies is to kill people and break things and to eventually win to the point where the other side surrenders and apologizes for what they did to start the whole thing. Because our president seems to think we're responsible for starting these things, that we're responsible for the existence of all of this anti-American evil out there because of our past transgressions as an unjust and illegitimately founded, whatever we are, country. So our president talks about not wanting to lead and not wanting to sloganeer and use terms like leadership and winning because that misses the point. That's not what we're all about. And we see that combined with other policies the president's implemented, and I'm here to tell you being scared is the only commonsensical reaction. And wanting to do something in opposition to it, stop it and fix it and reverse it, is also quite natural. So the opposition to the illegal immigrants, the opposition to, is nothing about Mexicans, the illegal refugees, nothing about bias against Syrians or ethnic bias, racist bias. It's about love of country and a recognition that we are at risk in a dangerous world, and it doesn't seem like we have a leadership too interested in defending us against what we see are not maybe possible threats, but they are real. They are happening. They have even happened on our own soil.
And you take the purpose of armies. Who knows the purpose of armies? China is doing a worldwide effort to make men more manly. Literally. Like having them go out and get naked, rolling in snow and combat contests and teaching them these arts. Well, in this country, we are doing everything we can to turn, well, men into women, if you think you can do that, and turn our military upside down into a literal social justice enterprise at the same time as we're buying windmills made in communist China under the tutelage of the Communist Chinese Party. And those are made by prison camp slaves. And Rush was always paying rapt attention to little details like that, like this article about the actual job of an army. He also paid incredible attention to the sponsors of this program, including the one company that offers you full assistance with your mortgage on EIB. It's the only mortgage company Rush spoke about.
A home refinance might be the smartest move you make all year. Could save you hundreds in interest every month, hundreds of dollars in interest every month. It could help you retire earlier, maybe pay off your loan sooner. But in order for it to really work, you have to be sure you're choosing the right loan with the right lender. And that's why I recommend American Financing. They are a family-owned company. They've been in business for over 20 years, and their mortgage consultants can customize any loan in the industry. That gives you the perfect program for your needs without charging upfront or hidden fees, because they only want what's best for you. They really do. Take advantage of a free mortgage review and see just how much you can save. Do this. Call American Financing now, 800-795-1210. That's 800-795-1210 or visit AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Today's EIB High Notes, about taking a negative and turning it into a positive. This happened to a woman named Chen Li. At the age of 60 in 2017, she suffered a stroke. And so this caused paralysis to her entire right side. So she had to use her left side for everything, which was her non-dominant side. And one day, under these circumstances, she decided to pick up a paintbrush. She'd never done that before. So to her pleasant surprise, it turned out she had a new talent. 500 paintings later, she's hoping to inspire other people who are dealing with medical adversity. And her daughter, Paulina Pernama, who credits her mom, credits painting to her mom's recovery, echoes that. Rush was delighted in the power of the human spirit. He actually spoke with Chen's daughter, Paulina Pernama.
We just want to tell other people that it's, don't ever give up, because a new life might be waiting for you. A new hobby, right? A new love, a new passion might come out of something that was so devastating. This is not the end, right? This is not, life as you know it is over. This is a change in the way that we knew things to be before, but it's not something that is hopeless. It's amazing how with family love and determination, how much a family can overcome.
It is. And speaking of the family, the EIB family knows this, that when Rush lost his hearing, a bunch of people said, that's it. He can't continue. But much like Chin Lee, there was something inside the Maha. I just laughed to think of him ever considering himself a victim. He refused to be one. He turned away, never did turn away from the golden EIB microphone. He wouldn't have dreamt of it. This lady also mentioned the power of family, which is, well, it's all of you in this audience. And I want you to know that you played a huge role in Rush being able to stay with us all these years. And as he would say, just keep the faith. He did. Let's talk to Steve, a truck driver in Oklahoma. Steve, you're on the Rush Limbaugh program. Todd Herman, your guide host today. Welcome, Steve. Glad you waited.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me on. Man, you're doing an awesome job. And I prefer to think of you as filling in for Rush, because we're all going to be together again someday after the second coming.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thank you for that.
Yes. And so my comment that I wanted to make was about the war on fossil fuels, you know, how the left is really performing a war on our economy using fossil fuels. And like you talked a while ago about the petroleum byproducts that we use to make cars, right? Like the tires.
Yeah.
But when you stop and think about every single thing that's in your automobile had some fossil fuel had to do with producing it, like the steel,
right,
and the aluminum. Petroleum products for the plastics and the wiring and the rubber and getting it to and from the dealership. And I mean, you just back everything up. And here's my big question that nobody's ever posed. If we move to all electric cars, what are we going to do with all of these vehicles that are on the road today? Where
they
are
intend
we gonna put them?
They intend to outlaw them. In Washington state, they are going to outlaw the sales of gas-powered cars, then they will intend to outlaw the driving of gas-powered cars. And then other separate countries like California and Oregon will follow suit. And, of course, poor people are going to be hardest hit. But trust government. They'll come up with something for the poor people, like subsidized Uber-type rides. So what is the end game? Well, I've been writing about this and speaking about this since I saw what they intended to do in Washington state with the GPS tracking of cars. That is being sold as the per-mile charge, which Mayor Pete had floated at the federal level. What that involves is a GPS unit in your car tracking you every inch of where you drive, charging you variable rates as per the government's desires. Doesn't want you to drive at that time? They triple the rates. They quadruple it. They do everything they can to cause you economic pain until you finally surrender and get on a choo-choo train or travel as they want, or give up your car and simply ride around with other people in these vehicles. So what? How is that tied to electric vehicles? They'd all be new vehicles. What would they all have in them? GPS units. What would they all be tied into? A great big grid. What happens? We no longer drive our cars where we want to drive our cars. Our cars drive us where the government gives us permission to go at certain times of day, on certain paths. There's a reason we keep fighting. That is one of the battles of our lifetime. And I know it seems strange, what's maybe not even tied together to people, but there's a reason there's never been a woke mask on my beak. I'll never make a habit of taking the knee to government. Wrap up the show as we continue and come back. It's Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network. It's been an incredible honor to be with you. And we just referenced in talking about the EIB high point that we feel a family here, our high note. We feel a family here. And yesterday we had James Golden on, who you know as Bo Snerdly, and he spoke about the longevity of this family. In his podcast, Rush Limbaugh, the man behind the golden EIB microphone, available at rushlimbaugh.com. He spoke about the longevity of this staff, this team, that worked for the Maha all these years. Interesting. Longevity of listeners. Longevity of staff. Longevity of advertisers. Longevity of growth. All from one operating theory. Hire the very smartest, most creative people and let them do what they do. Let them, in other words, take their talents on loan from God and contribute them to the Maha's talent on loan from God and to build something that for three decades was the largest town hall in the world done every single day. And you guys were and are a part of it. It's something that you helped build. So if you get to thinking, what did I help build? Well, many things. A family, this, your faith, and the world's largest town hall meeting. See you tomorrow. Todd Herman, your guide host this week on the EIB Network.